Welcome to a Veterans Podcast, powered by Wisconsin Veterans Network, the show where we hear unique, inspiring stories from veterans all over. Veterans who've transitioned, who've overcome obstacles, and even those still struggling. We will learn all veterans have a unique story, ones filled with pain and triumphs, and we will learn no veteran is alone, no matter the path they took. We share their stories to help motivate and inspire the world, to help understand what it means to be a veteran, and most of all, we share to give them a voice amongst the noise. You can find us at aveteranspodcast.com to learn more and how you can be a part of the show. Hey, everybody. Kelsey and Noah here.
Welcome.
And we have a very special guest on the show. It is our first interview, which is super exciting. So I would like to welcome Bosomate Third Class, Anjali Holmes, who served in the Coast Guard from 2008 to 2015. And she's actually a friend of mine. We met in college. So I think her story is super unique, and I'm really excited to tell it. So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I can honestly say really quick, I've never really had a conversation with anybody in the Coast Guard. So this is quite interesting for myself.
Yeah, we're pretty rare. Yeah.
It is very rare.
You know, we figured we'd catch everybody off guard and have somebody from the Coast Guard first. They're going right.
We do exist. People don't know it, but we really do exist.
You guys just come out of the woodworks out of the blue.
You're like a unicorn.
Mm-hmm. Right?
The many times I've been called that, you would have no idea.
So crazy. How did you two meet?
We met in school. I walked into the Veterans Center at UW Parkside, and she was there. Right?
In all my glory, yes. Right. I was there. I was the president of the Veterans Org there. I don't know if I was the president at the time when I met Kelsey, but I helped found it with two other students there. And so I was always in the Vet Center, just welcoming people and trying to get them at least in a sense of community somehow.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I walked in and I was like, this is stupid. Why doesn't my GI Bill work? Where's my money? And you were like, whoa.
Yeah, and I was like, I like you.
We should be friends.
we are friends already. You just don't know it.
Oh, what a mess.
Pretty much.
So let's just like kick it off here. So why did you join the military and why did you choose the Coast Guard?
Man, that is always such a hard question to answer. I get it from, I mean, I guess you're not a stranger, but I'm, you know, this is going to be like out for a whole bunch of other people, but, I guess I joined for a multitude of reasons. I think like a lot of us, both my parents were Navy, that's where they met. They weren't active when I was growing up, but it was very much a part of who, like how they raised us, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I always felt a sense of pride in that. And I was, at the time I was in college and I was trying to work full time and trying to go to school full time and a young adult that, you know, was trying to learn the world at the same time. And it was really hard. It was really hard. And I was struggling and I just decided, you know, that's not the way to do it. Mm-hmm. And so I had a frank conversation with my parents and dropped out of college. And it was like one of the most humbling things ever, you know, like defeat at its finest. Moved back in with my parents while I was trying to join. It took me about a year to get in because Coast Guard doesn't need people. And I was determined to get into the Coast Guard.
How old were you?
I was like 22 when I actually like officially joined.
Okay.
Yeah. But I had a friend, his name was, Aaron. He actually drowned in Lake Michigan. Ooh. And the Coast Guard were the ones that were out there searching for him. And that made a huge impact on my life. Like huge. He was big guy, 6 foot, you know, got caught in the undertow standing. Oof. And both my parents were like, you're not joining the Navy.
Hey, that's rude. The Navy's great.
I don't know about that.
They say that now, you know, like there's tons of, you know, like shit talking back and forth, you know, between us or whatever, but they just didn't think it was right for me. And I agreed. I just really, really love the Coast Guard's mission. Mm-hmm. And I love that they did everything, you know, like not only trained for battle, but they also, their main mission was saving lives.
Yeah.
So I figured I'd get the, you know, a full round experience, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's cool.
What kind of job did you pick? I don't even know anything about the jobs in the
He's
Coast
Army.
Guard.
You got to excuse him. Yeah. He's a little slow.
I got nothing.
Your excuse.
The only thing I know about the Coast Guard is like, what is that movie with Ashton Kutcher?
Oh man, that's a good movie. Goodness.
I'm just saying, like that's the only thing I know.
Be still my heart. Yeah.
That is just a part of what the Coast Guard does.
Right.
Just a part. I mean, our jobs are very similar to the Navy, but we're much smaller. So basically we have, like, my job was a bosun's mate, but I also had general knowledge of other branches or other jobs, because we were so spread so thin that if one person fell, somebody has to cover that, right? Like, and there's not enough people on board to have multiple, you know, rates.
Yeah.
So we're just smaller.
You did like everything from drive the ship to like be a firefighter, like all those
yep.
things, right?
Yep. I had all, yep.
That's pretty cool.
All that kind of training. Yeah. Yeah. It was fun. I mean, there's no like typical day in the Coast Guard. I'd say every day is different. And I think I don't know a lot about the other branches, just like you guys don't know a lot about the other branches. But like for us, like I said, our main mission is search and rescue. So we were running missions, you know, sometimes daily mm-hmm. because that's our job, you know. So we're out there and we're in it every day.
Yeah.
All day, you know, all times. So.
And I think sometimes, like, realistically, the other branches forget about that. No offense. But I think, like, because we're so out there, you know what I mean? And you guys are doing yeah. all the same business at home, you know, plus, yep. like, catching drug dealers and stuff. You know, so it's.
Yep. It's drug and addiction. I did POTUS ops, escorted high interest vessels. Just, it's just so round, you know. Like what we do is it's just different, you know, like
yeah.
from joint operations with different branches to different government agencies to, you know, basic law enforcement, which is why we're part of Homeland Security. So we can actually do law enforcement.
That's cool.
Don't
that's
know if you guys cool. knew that or not.
I mean,
but that's why
I read
we're
it on
Homeland
Google.
Security. Yeah.
So you had a pretty like crazy career, and maybe one day we mm-hmm. can get into that story too. But for now, so you served 7 years. Why mm-hmm. did you get out of the military?
I was medically retired.
So it wasn't your choice?
No, it was not my choice. Well, you know, I don't know if a lot of other people experienced this, but it was similar for people that I served with. Like, you know, 1 minute you're like, I love this. This is awesome. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And then the next minute you're like, I hate this. I need to get out.
I think everybody's dealt with that moment.
Yeah, for sure.
Exactly. Like up and down, sometimes daily, sometimes mm-hmm. hourly, you know? So I was always on the fence what I was going to do. And I was hitting 7 years. And at that point you really have to make a decision, but the decision was made for me. And to be fair, I don't know what I would have picked.
That's fair.
If I was given the choice.
I think
you know,
it's
I don't.
Easy right. to look back now and be like, oh, I would have done 20. That was my life.
Right.
You know,
it's probably easier just to accept to a certain degree that the military made the decision for you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, either way, I guess if you look at both ways, it sucks. But I guess it made it a little easier that the choice was made for you.
Yeah. At the time, I don't know if I would have been happy with that answer, but absolutely. Looking back, yeah. When I was getting out, I was pretty angry. I'm not, like, I was pretty mad. But going through a medical board is a whole different stressful process that I think unless somebody has gone through it can understand. It's so hard, and you don't know whether you're staying in or getting out from 1 minute to the next. And then once you're kind of determined that you're getting out, it's almost like a switch flips with people that you serve with, even that, you know, they're your brothers and sisters and you care for them so much and they're your best friends or worst enemies that you serve with, whatever. But like a switch flips and then you're no longer useful, yeah. I guess, because you're getting out. And even with people that are not getting med boarded, you're getting out. So you're kind of a traitor and people start kind of slowly turning their backs to you.
Yeah, I can understand that. Yeah, I didn't know that. Like, the Army does that a lot, but I didn't realize, I guess, it happens in other services where you're just, as soon as that decision's made, whether med board or not, you're just kind of forgotten.
Yeah. Well, they just purposely, it's like, they're like, well, you're not, you don't want to be one of us anymore.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, it wasn't my choice, man.
Right. Right. Yeah.
So in how long was your med board process?
I was injured in April of 2013, and I got out August of 2015.
So about a year?
A little over a year.
Oh, over a year.
Yeah. It took a while. It felt like forever, but then again, it didn't. Mm-hmm. You know, I was not prepared when I got out by any means.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
That was my next question in your process of transitioning in that whole med board process, how did you prepare for it? I know it sounds like it was kind of last minute, but you had a little bit of time there, and what did you do to prepare yourself?
I mean, I went to TAPS, right? Everybody goes to TAPS.
That word around here, like...
right. Actually, during TAPS, the instructor asked me if I was pregnant, and if that's why I was getting out, so that was... real great. I was only enlisted female there. It was a little embarrassing, not why I was getting out, just so everybody knows. but that was just really, I mean, it was 2014 when I took that class, so not much had changed, you know, I guess, in the military that way for women. Like, that's a blatant example. I wasn't prepared. I had some family issues before that and cleared out my accounts, my bank account to deal with some things. And so I didn't have much money. There was no way for me to actually like really prepare, especially with all the traveling I was doing to try to heal myself.
Yeah.
Right. I was constantly going to new doctors across the Midwest region, and I was spending my own money just trying to just get back to normal. There's a while where I couldn't use my right arm without like excruciating pain, like tears, shaking, like I had no function of it. Physical therapy, like lots of stuff going on, and I just wanted some kind of normal. So I did spend the little bit of money that I had just trying to get help outside of what, you know, the military doctor said was appropriate.
Right.
You know? So when I got out, I didn't have anything. Like I said, I had some family stuff going on, and it's no fault of my family or anything. Like, my family is wonderful. I just didn't feel like going home was appropriate for me at the time, like mentally.
Yeah.
So I ended up in Kenosha, Wisconsin with, two really good friends of mine, but I didn't have anything. Like, I didn't have savings. I didn't have anything. I didn't even have enough money coming in for my own place.
Yeah.
I was making less than $500 a month with my quote unquote retirement. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a VA. I didn't have a rating. The Coast Guard doesn't do that, even though I was medically retired.
Really?
So I had to do all that by myself. Yep.
It's not part of your med board process?
I was technically 30% through the Coast Guard, but not the VA. The VA is a whole different.
Oh.
Wow.
And they don't connect with the VA. So I had to figure that all out on my own.
I didn't know that.
Jeez. I didn't know that either.
And they don't, I don't know what the deal is, but it's happened with a lot of other people I know. I don't know if it's standard practice, but that you don't walk out with your DD-214 either. They're supposed to send it to you. And it took me forever.
That's like unusual. I've never heard of that either.
I know. Yeah. I know. And so I wasn't getting my DD-214. They just didn't send it. So I had to fight for, it was like, it took me a couple months. I couldn't get a job. Like I was flagged in the VA system as a homeless veteran.
Wow.
And if my friends didn't let me crash at their place, I was homeless. Like I didn't have a place to go. I had to cash in my TSP.
Okay.
To survive.
And how long from the moment you left, as you were saying you were homeless, sleeping on couches, how long from the moment you left to the point that you felt like things were coming together? Like you were either getting stabilized and getting your own place or finding a better job. Like how long was that transition, that rough point in the transition?
I would say that actually this year, like beginning of COVID, is when I finally felt like I could breathe.
Okay.
Which is crazy because a lot of people felt like that's when they couldn't breathe.
Yeah,
and they're
right?
Like, I finally have a moment like that.
But
that's when
all my disability stuff finally was figured out.
So it took what, like five years?
Yeah.
Man.
Jeez.
So I was very angry when I got out, and that was kind of an advantage of mine because I use that anger as a way to advocate for myself.
Yeah.
And I'm not one that can just sit there and just accept what's happening to me and just like, I have to do something about it. So I went to any veteran's place that would listen to me and ask for help, which is the hardest thing ever to do. That is not me. Still to this day, even though I'm going to school for counseling, I still like, it's like sandpaper coming out of my mouth. You know, like so hard.
Do you think the military made you that way, or is that just your normal personality?
No, completely.
That it made you feel like you couldn't ask for help to a certain degree?
100%.
Okay.
You're taught, or I guess told, forced even, to figure it out on your own.
Yeah.
Asking for help is almost weakness. And as a team member in the Coast Guard, you have a job and you need to do that job. And that job is in line with all the other jobs. And as long as everybody does their job and does it well, people survive. Mm-hmm. And
right.
And that's it. You know, we don't usually have the luxury of being like, hey, can you stop what you're doing and help me?
Yeah.
Not when it really matters. So you learn your job, you do your job, you figure it out when they always, you know, quote, think outside of the box, you know?
And you just briefly touched on going to like therapy and stuff. When you were in service, did you ever feel the need that you wanted to go to therapy, but there was a stigma? And I guess that goes in along the lines of asking for help, but,
I mean, Coast Guard is just like any other branch where if you're seen to need any kind of medication or if you're struggling mentally, it can hinder your career big time. So they have EAP, it's Employee Assistance Program. It's confidential. You get like 12 visits,
right,
and you talk on the phone to a counselor. I used that a couple times. I mean, doing search and rescue and just a lot of things that I dealt with personally. I felt like I needed it. I didn't feel like shoving everything down was appropriate, right, which I mean, I did shove a lot down, but for them, like it was so much that I felt like there was times I did need to talk to somebody. So I was really grateful for that program. We also had, chaplains and stuff. But you had to be very careful. Like you had to be very careful with that kind of stuff. I had a really terrible CO that if you showed any kind of emotion outside of what she felt was she wanted at the time, you were in trouble. And that carried along with me ever since.
That's wild.
So, I mean,
Especially just, as a female. Like, I hate to say that, but, like, as a female CEO, you'd think there'd be a different level
she was
of,
worse.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But, you know, I think she was, I mean, I'll never have excuses for her behavior.
Yeah.
But I do think part of it is because as a female in the military, you have to be tough. You have to be seen as tough. You have to be seen as more, I don't know the right word, stone-faced, I guess, more capable, more competitive, like just more.
You have to overcompensate on everything. For your femaleness. If that
I get
was
it.
Word.
Yeah.
I get it.
You no, like you it. Have to not be female, but be a female at the same time. And if another female next to you does anything that could look bad in any way, shape, or form, even no matter how misguided it is, it looks bad upon you. And I was her pet. Oh. I was the only enlisted female on that boat.
Wow.
Like for a couple months. Like the boat was not made for females. It was all male crew with a female CO. I didn't have a place to sleep. I didn't have anything. My stuff was in trash bags, my first patrol. Because I didn't even have it. I had to share the head with her, even.
Jeez Louise. I have no words. Like, I'm really like, man, I didn't even know this. And she's my friend. But it's crazy.
But that's what made me when I got out. I've always been interested in psychology and people and stuff like that. But the need for counseling for veterans is huge.
Yeah.
Because we're so programmed. We're so programmed. And it's amazing what even just talking to somebody that has a similar just background, military background, that's unbiased, that's welcoming, can do for you. It's incredible.
Yeah, for sure.
When you transitioned out and you came to Kenosha, you mentioned two friends and you just kind of touched on, you know, finding other veterans. Were those two veterans?
So one of the friends I was stationed with in Duluth, Minnesota, he was, I think, even my officer of the day with my my duty section for a while. But we just became kind of Coast Guard family. It was him and his wife. So, like, I was in Duluth and with them, and then I went to Virginia, then he went to Virginia, then I went to, you know, Massachusetts, they went to Massachusetts. So throughout our careers, we just kind of were within a few hours from each other. Right. So we became Coast Guard family. I mean, I'm sure you guys have people that you served with that are just now family, period.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's what these people were for me and still are. Mm-hmm. And without them, I mean, I don't know where I would be at all.
So having those fellow veterans definitely helped your transition over just having civilian friends?
Yeah, I had a really hard time trying to make civilian friends, to be fair.
Same.
I still struggle sometimes.
I
tried really hard, really hard. I just had a hard time connecting. And school, my first semester of school, I was about to drop out if I didn't. Like, the only thing that saved me was I begged this woman that was our certifying official to give me a job. So I could learn about my benefits. Cause again, I'm one of those people that can't sit there and do nothing. And I didn't understand my benefits and I knew I needed money and I knew I needed to go to school and nobody was explaining it to me. So I figured if I took the job, somebody would have to explain it to me. And there wasn't even a job available. I begged her to just give me a chance and she did.
Well,
and
that's huge. That's how you helped. I would say like probably 90% of the veterans or family members who received GI Bill benefits at Parkside. I think you were a huge driving force in making sure people got what they needed.
Well, I didn't want them to experience what I did. I felt so alone. I was so alone. Yeah. That was one of the lowest points of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can recognize another veteran across the classroom and all.
Of course.
But, you know, we all just wanted to go keep our heads down and go home. Mm-hmm. But for me, going home,
wasn't
there was nothing
place.
At home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was hooked up with this really wonderful veterans outreach program that got me my own apartment and paid for my first few months' rent. So once I got into that, there really wasn't anything at home. I was completely by myself. And at that point, my friend's marriages, their marriage had dissolved.
Yeah.
And he had transferred. And so she's a mess. And my one and only friend is falling apart.
Yeah.
You know, and I would like, my world was in shambles, and it was a really hard time. So that's why like transitioning was so hard. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hands down, so hard.
If you had to give somebody advice about their transition out, like they just found out they're getting med boarded and they have to get out, what is like the biggest piece of advice you would give them?
I would say, don't be silent, fight for yourself, be the squeaky wheel, be annoying. Like, I annoyed myself every day. I'm like thinking about all the people I'm calling them over and over because nobody's listening. And I'm like, I'm annoying myself,
yeah.
But I got things done for myself that way. And I would say, look for other veterans, mm-hmm. Look for your community. I mean, it's so hard. I mean, I mentioned it earlier when you're getting out, and once people know that you're getting out, it's like they turn their backs on you.
Yeah.
These are people that you served with, that you put your life in their hands, you know, mm-hmm. And then now they're turning their backs on you, whether they mean to or not, they're doing it.
Yeah.
So you not only lose your sense of purpose, you lose your career, you also lose your friends. So you need to find that community. We're out there. We're all out there. We're all cynical veterans out here that will sit with you at a bonfire and just talk, you know?
Yeah.
We're there. We just got to find each other, mm-hmm. and don't hesitate to just go up and talk to another vet. We're all weird.
Yeah.
You know? Like, that's the best part about it. We're all so weird, but that's the fun of it all.
Yeah. So
find that community.
Go ahead, Noah.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that's really good advice.
Yeah.
Very solid advice.
That's the community is what helped me get where I'm at. I mean, if it wasn't for me talking to other veterans and seeking out other veterans and taking that job, I wouldn't have the resources that I had, and I wouldn't be where I'm at right now. I'm in grad school. I was about to drop out my first semester.
Yeah.
The only thing that kept me there was learning about my benefits and knowing that, what am I going to do? I can't afford not to be in school.
Yeah.
Did you, when you talk about seeking out other veterans, did you rely more on like social media or in person? Because social media is playing a big role in the younger veteran generation, but how did you find them?
They found me, actually. I mean, I found them and they found me, I should say, because I took that job.
Okay.
Like, so when in a couple of my classes, I had other vets that I just met. And so they're the ones that actually pointed to me where the certified official office was. Like, I didn't even know anything, you know, so they're the ones that got me there. And I leaned on them heavily. They're my only friends. And, you know, I made friends at the VA, like my physical therapist. I was like, just be my friend. And he's like, you're so weird, but okay.
You do what you gotta do, man.
Right. I was like, you're my friend. And he's like, okay. But in taking that job, I had to talk to other veterans, and I wanted to talk to other veterans. And that's how I started meeting other people in the school. And then from that, in the community, and then from that in with like big picture Wisconsin and nationally.
Yeah.
But it was just that small, I think, act of reaching out to that first vet in my class saying, hey, I'm really confused about what I'm supposed to be doing here. Well, do you know where I can go?
Yeah.
Kind of like when I came to you.
Yeah.
Help me.
You were a little bit louder. You were.
I can guarantee she was.
That's so rude. Yeah. You guys are awful.
I'm glad to hear somebody else says that too.
Oh my gosh. I didn't ask for this today. Come on now.
Right.
You didn't need to.
So besides like you personally learning your benefits and things like that, were there any resources that you found especially helpful during your transition, after your transition? Even now, like, are there resources that you find that you're like, man, this is really helpful and I wish other veterans knew about it? Because, you know, Wisconsin Veterans Network, where we work, we're a resource center. Right. So we're always willing to learn about more resources.
I think that mine were pretty traditional. And a lot of the resources that I found were, I researched myself and found. Mm-hmm. But I would say that the biggest ones that helped me was Veterans Outreach of Wisconsin.
Okay.
They helped me big time, food pantry, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Racine County Veterans Service, what is that?
The CVSO.
The CVSO.
Yeah. Yeah, those, they, I joke that they're like my really, you know, weird fairy godfathers, because they've helped me with so many different aspects of life and with disability claims, because that has been the hardest and most stressful thing that I think I've ever been through.
Yeah, for sure.
Like hardcore. Like that has been the worst for me.
Mm-hmm.
Zach that runs that, he has never quit for me.
Yeah.
And that act alone, I mean, I don't even know if I have words. And Brad, that used to work there, that now works at Parkside, same thing. He never quit for me either. And it's having those people in your corner that refuse to quit.
Yeah.
Even when I wanted to quit and they're like, no, we're just going to keep moving forward. And I'm like, I need a break. And they're like, you sit there, take a break. We're going to keep moving forward.
Yeah.
So, and they are the ones that actually got me, tons of resources when I found that other veterans needed it, even in just contacting other people through the VA or anything. Mm-hmm. But those are like that service office would be the number one for me, because they're so connected. Their fingers are throughout the community.
Yeah. That's cool. I'm glad you found that.
That would be, I'm at a loss for words, and you know me, Kelsey, that's not really me.
No, I'm just kidding.
All joking aside, but seriously, it's,
yeah,
they're in your corner. Mm-hmm. And it's free.
Yeah. And we like free stuff.
That's true.
Yeah. And when you know that you have challenges in life and disabilities that are not being recognized, and you're scared because you don't know how you're going to maintain a job,
mm-hmm,
because you physically can't.
Yeah.
Or you only have so much in you physically, and mm-hmm, you know, the world is demanding all these things of you, and you just can't, and nobody's listening to you. It's having people in your corner is hard, is like hardcore number one. But I think that within the veteran community, we all have that.
Yeah.
I mean, that person does not have to be in a position like Zach's in.
Mm-hmm.
That person can be in a position like I was at Parkside, or just a friend like you, Kelsey, just a friend that says, hey, let me reach out to my friends in the area and see what I can find for you.
Yeah. You know, I'm nosy. I like to be in everybody's business, make sure you're taken care of. That's my job.
Well, I truly appreciate that about you.
Oh, thanks.
Seriously.
I'm nosy about Noah, too, but.
That's nice.
Now he's getting nervous. He's like, oh, jeez.
I can be quiet. When I'm quiet, she, you know, she's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, not you're a well. Mess. So as we get ready to wrap this up, is there anything else like you want to add, any advice, anything
to your story that will have, I mean, your story alone is amazing and will have a great impact on other veterans who listen to this, but like anything else that you want to say, that you want to tell your part of the story or have that gut impact on another veteran? It's
because there's a veteran out there listening right now like, man, that's my story. Like, is there anything that you want to say to them? Like, this is your chance.
You're not alone. You're not. That was one of the hardest things I dealt with, was feeling alone. Mm-hmm. And realizing that realization, just working at Parkside, in that office, talking to other veterans that were coming through, asking questions about their benefits, there's all of our stories are so similar. Mm-hmm. So similar. We have this in so many different ways. And that's when I actually felt like I wasn't alone. But it took me listening and reaching out. And that's hard.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm going to school to be a counselor. And when I ask for help, it is like sandpapers in my mouth. It's still really, really difficult, but it's worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's worth it. And sometimes you ask for help and somebody, that person's not available to help you, but you have to keep asking, mm-hmm. but you're not alone and there's help out there. And by help, I mean, there's people out there.
Yeah.
For you. We all have our people.
No, that's good. I think that's
don't really sit good. At home by yourself. You know?
Well, no, just kidding. But yeah, I get what you're saying.
Don't
find your person.
Your people. We're out there. There's a whole bunch of weirdos out there for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And we like to be weird.
Well, I think that's really solid advice. And in saying so, if there's any projects you're working on, if there's any way for people to find you, it's totally up to you. If you have social media or anybody wanted to reach out to you, now's your chance. Like, I don't know, some veterans have side projects that they work on, even other podcasts or stuff like that. If you don't, you don't. But we thought we'd ask...
Are you writing a memoir or something? That would be cool.
No, I'm not.
You should. You got a good story.
Oh, I'm not ready for that. I'm not ready. Right now, I don't have any side projects. I'm working on graduate school. But if Kelsey can testify, I guess, that I'm always trying to help in any way that I can.
Yeah.
So if there is somebody out there that would like to get in contact with me or just talk as a friend, I guess it would be okay, Kelsey, if they reached out to you and you just sent them my way.
Yeah, for sure. They can reach out to us and we can pass them on over to you.
Yeah, VetsNet we thoroughly vouch for somebody. Yeah. So we're not going to send any crazies your way.
Yeah.
Man, it's sometimes as much vetting as you do, you never know.
That's true.
This isn't a dating podcast, don't worry.
Yeah, right.
Thank God. It's a whole nother story.
Well, thank you so, so very much for coming on the show today. And thank you for being our first interview. This was awesome.
Yeah, I really appreciate really you taking time out of your day to tell your story and hopefully your story helps another veteran.
Yeah, that's the goal. Thank you so much. I really hope that I set a good tempo for you guys. It's a lot of pressure.
I think you set a high bar.
Yeah, it's going to be real hard to beat this one.
Yeah.
Jeez.
But it's good coming out the gate real strong. So, yeah you have a great story, and I really appreciate your time today.
Yeah. Thank you so much, you guys.
Have a great day.
You too.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.
So that was really good. That was fun.
Yeah. That was good. I'm hyped up.
I think it was a very great story to start our show, and it sets a precedence for other veterans who want to come on the show and speak about their stories and share it. Just, you know, she brought up a lot of great stuff that we've heard from other veterans, not on the podcast, but
and you can share as little or as much as your story as you feel comfortable with. Like if you choose, you heard her story and you're like, man, my story is completely different, but I feel like somebody could learn from it.
Yep.
We want you to share what you feel comfortable with, but I think any little bit is great for people to hear.
And if you don't know, today's show is sponsored by Wisconsin Veterans Network. an established nonprofit ran by veterans for veterans. Their main mission is to provide guidance and support for veterans looking for any kind of assistance in the state of Wisconsin. You can find more information about them at wisvetsnet.org or on our website at aveteranspodcast.com. But yeah, I think today went really well. And if you have any comments or concerns, you can always find us at aveteranspodcast.com if you want to share your story, sign up. Again, I think the world needs to hear more veteran stories to understand where we come from, and so other veterans can also better themselves.
Yeah. So, thank you for listening to A Veterans Podcast today. To learn more about us, to hear previous episodes, or if interested in being on the show, you can find us at aveteranspodcast.com. We'd also like to thank our sponsor, Wisconsin Veterans Network, a Wisconsin nonprofit operated by veterans and serving veterans in need. Till next time.
We'll see you guys. Thanks for listening today.